I know how you feel. Well, those are the words that we sometimes hear from people we know. Those are words that we hear in a variety of circumstances, and they are used every single day. Usually when a person says to us or says to someone else, I know how you feel, they're trying to express sympathy, or they're trying to help, and they're trying to, you know, associate with us in some way and say, I really know what something is like. Well, there are a number of cases in life where even though those words are spoken, the person really does not know what it's like. They may not have any clue. I mean, they may be as clueless as a person can possibly be about what we're facing. Imagine, if you will, a person who is thinking about ending his life. They tell someone that they know, I'm thinking about taking my life. And the person says, oh, I know how you feel. Well, chances are the person who makes that statement does not know how they feel. Or imagine another individual who is struggling with deep, deep depression. And a well-meaning friend comes along and says, oh yeah, I know exactly what that kind of thing is like. Well, maybe. But more than likely, the friend who makes that statement trying to help really does not know what it's like. There are some people in life that as we see what they experience, as we maybe hear them tell what they experience, it is the case that we really can identify with them. There are people who have similar experiences. But it's also frequently the case that there are some people in life that we simply, for one reason or another, cannot identify with very well. Having said that, that is one of the reasons that makes Jesus a very, very special person. He can, literally and fully, identify with every single individual. Prophecy hinted at this in places like Isaiah chapter 7 and verse 14. 7 centuries before Jesus came into the world, Isaiah said there would be a virgin, a young lady, and she would conceive. The prophet said that not only would she conceive, she would bring forth a son, and he would be named Emmanuel. Well, this prophecy, of course, was fulfilled. It is fulfilled in the one that we call Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Jesus came into this world. He was fully human, and he is able to identify with us in every way. He faced the broadest range of experiences and temptations. He knew what it was like to be poor. He also knew what it was like to be royalty, a king. Jesus, as we look at him, we find that he had many experiences. He was a teacher, a healer, a man who was exposed to building trades and even the work of a salesman as he tried to preach about the coming kingdom. Jesus gathered around himself a group of men, and in many respects, that was like having a family. We also, as we look at his life, find that as those disciples interacted with him for a period of about 3.5 years, that they engaged in a number of squabbles and acted like children. Tonight, we want to examine many of the ways in which Jesus is able to identify with mankind. We start with what to me seems to be the most logical beginning point, and that is physical growth. Heaven, and again, this is assuming that prophecy would have been worded a little differently, but potentially, Jesus could have been sent into the world as a full-grown human being, could have just showed up on the planet one day. But that was not heaven's choice. God decided, it was decreed that Jesus was going to come as a baby, and that's what prophecy promised, Isaiah chapter 7 and verse 14. Now, if you're very old, you've probably seen some science fiction shows about babies, and there are all kinds of weird shows about there. They look like aliens in the womb and some other strange things, but heaven did not have that kind of thing in mind. Jesus came as a regular child. And as you look at the pregnancy and so forth, aside from what's called the Immaculate Conception, that is, there was no father involved, it was not that extraordinary. It was a very, very normal situation. Not only did Jesus come into the world in the regular way, he grew. That statement is made in Luke chapter 2, verse 40, and also at the end of Luke chapter 2, verse 52. In verse 40 of Luke 2, we are told, and the child, that's Jesus, grew and waxed strong, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. And as we come to that final verse in Luke 2, verse 52 says, and Jesus advanced in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Jesus fully identified with man in the early years. Think, if you will, about all the things that are associated with childhood. As we grew up, we had to learn how to clean ourselves. As we were a young person, we had to learn how to dress ourselves. Mom, dad, both, or one of those parents, or somebody else taught us how to take care of ourselves. As children, we're taught how to stand up, how to crawl, how to walk. Some form of education is usually given to children. As young people, we get hurt. We quickly learn what it means to be hungry, and of course, all children get sick. As young people, we learn how to make friends, and then we come to finally realize one day that not everybody likes us. Time comes when we learn about having disagreements with other people. Young people, Children learn about love, joy, peace, the positive side of life, and then they also learn that there are some bad parts of life as well. If childhood lasts for 18 years, think about the wide range of experiences that we have for almost two decades. I did the math. 18 years times 365 days per year comes out to a total of 6,570 days in childhood. If you take that number of days times 24 hours in a day, it comes to 157,680 hours, just under 160,000 hours. Now, I don't know about you, but if you have 160,000 hours to spend, and obviously some will be spent sick or resting, things like that, but that is a lot of time. And it is plenty of time for a wide range of experiences. Well, the Bible in Luke chapter 2 is affirming that Jesus had all that time. He went through, during that period, a wide range of experiences. Our world often looks at Jesus as a baby. Others concentrate on him in the adult years, and that certainly is an important aspect of his life. But let's not forget that Jesus also went through those young years, a period that some are going through right now, or maybe have just finished. And that is a very, very helpful lesson for people. Young person, perhaps in the teenage years, or maybe when they're 8, 9, 10, they may hear some information about Jesus or look at the Bible and say, how can that person, how can the Son of God possibly have any relevance in my life? How can he help me? How can he understand the issues and the temptations and the peer pressure and all the other things that I'm facing? Well, the answer is found in Luke chapter 2, verses 40 and 52. Jesus grew. He advanced. He went through that same period that all of us, if we're adults, have gone through. He faced the pressures of youth, the temptations, and the challenges of those early years. So it's not surprising that Peter in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21, says that Jesus is our example. His example is for those who are still growing, and it is an example for those who are mature. His example is certainly relevant as we think about faithfulness as young people grow up. We can see that as a young individual, Jesus chose to do what was right time and time again. Now, we don't have a lot of information about his early years, but that is the information that we're given in Scripture. He always chose to do what was right. Today, young people can make that same choice. It is still possible to do what is right, to pursue that path. After maturing, Jesus entered into adulthood, and he continued to be an example. In John chapter 8, verse 40, it's kind of an interesting verse, but if you were to look at that particular passage, Jesus says, I am a man. So a time did come when he put away childish things. A time did come when he was a man. Not only did Jesus claim to be a man, but he claimed to be a man who told the truth. That same verse, John 8, verse 40. Jesus often dealt with some people who were not very nice people. He dealt with some people where it would have been far easier just to leave those individuals alone, not say anything to them, and mind his own business. But he knew that that was not going to be right. If he had changed subjects or he had kept silent, his life would have been a lot easier. But Jesus chose to do what heaven wanted him to do. He was a godly man in every possible way. And again, as we look at the Lord's example from an adult standpoint, it's helpful to us in our day and time. Men and women today, adults, can look at life, especially the Christian life, and think as we look at Christianity. And as we look at our world, it is so hard to live as a Christian. Our world is filled with temptation on every single corner. And not only is it outside the house of every person, it's also widely available inside the house of every person. There, of course, are the temptations to lie, to cheat. Others might be involved or at least tempted to be involved with theft and deception. Basic honesty does not seem, at least in this country, to be found in the masses. So if we have a society that is really a cesspool of sin, how is a Christian going to be successful in that kind of environment? The answer is found in Jesus. He also was someone, as an adult, who lived in a very hostile environment. Yet as you look at Jesus and as he dealt with people and was exposed to just all kinds of situations, he maintained his integrity time after time after time, and that is the example that we want to follow. That's not always an easy choice. It's not always a fun choice, but it is a possible choice. Another thing that we see about Jesus as we look at his life and we want to understand how he can identify fully with mankind today is found in Matthew chapter 4, verse 2. We're familiar with that. It describes his temptations. In Matthew 4, verse 2, we're told that he fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. Now, having been without food for an extended period of time makes all of us hungry. Skip one meal. And I think there are several people who are ready to woof down whatever a person puts on the table for the next meal. Miss two meals and a person probably doesn't care about taste the next meal. I mean, hey, whatever comes up, we're going to eat it. and miss 3 meals in a row. And I suspect there are some people who are going to eat whatever they can find. Junk, snack food, whatever it is. If it fills the belly or at least helps quench the hunger pains, it's going to be very, very appetizing. Well, imagine 40 days, no food. That's what the writer affirms in Matthew chapter 4. Satan came along and said, hey, Jesus, you can turn these stones into bread. You can make some food. A temptation was put before the Lord, and when you look at that temptation, you find that it allows him to fully identify with mankind. It was a temptation that is as strong as any possibly could be, and it has some parallels in our world. It is a temptation that the alcoholic can identify with. If we have never had much involvement with alcohol and we talk to an alcoholic, that person may say, you can't identify with me. You've never lived a life where you want to go back to that bottle every waking minute of the day. And we'd have to say that that's true. But even though that would be true for us, Jesus does understand. Matthew 4, verse 2. He was put into a position where he wanted that bread. He was hungry. And the devil says, you can make this. You have the power within yourself to turn these stones into bread. It is also parallel to the person who's addicted to taking drugs or something else. So when an individual is battling a temptation and they think, oh, this is so strong, it's so powerful, the pull is just so great, nobody can understand. We may not be able to understand that, but Jesus can because he's been there. The circumstances, of course, were different. The object was different. It was bread, not drugs or alcohol, but the basics are exactly the same. He was exposed to a very powerful temptation, and he can fully identify with all people. Aside from this particular temptation, we also think about Jesus and his ability to identify with men from the standpoint of weariness. When you look at Jesus' life, you find that there were times when he was tired. One of those times is described in John chapter 4, verse 6. The verse says that Jesus sat by a well. Now, it doesn't specifically say that Jesus was so tired that he collapsed, but you do get the impression that Jesus was really exhausted. Today, there are people who have hard, they have dirty jobs that leave them at the end of the day or the end of the week with absolutely no energy. I've met people who feel like they are just wrung out by the time they get to the end of the day. They feel like they're just so exhausted they can barely drive home. Or it may be a situation that's slightly different. A person may have bad health. And that is their lot in life day after day after day. That's kind of a contradiction in terms, but a living person may feel like they're a dead person just because bad health has left them with absolutely no energy. And a person says, you can't understand what I go through at my job. You can't understand the kind of health that I have. Well, those things may be true. But even though we may not be able to really identify with that person in that particular way, Jesus can. John chapter 4, verse 6. While others work their fingers to the bone, there are still other people who struggle with being homeless. We find as we look at our world in this country and elsewhere that there are individuals who have poor economic circumstances. They are literally destitute. Tonight we have a place to go home to, but there are people in the world who do not have that option. Most of us probably had at least one meal today, but there are people in our world who had nothing to eat for the whole day. Now we probably can't identify with those people. We probably never slept on a cardboard box outside our house because we had nowhere to go. We'd probably not miss too many days where we had nothing to eat day after day after day because we lacked food. But when we look at Jesus, he can identify with those people. He was poor. We know that because of verses like Luke chapter 9, verse 58. Jesus said, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Imagine if you can walking down a city street, and there as you make your journey, you see a homeless person with a shopping cart. They have no home. There is no bed for them to go home to. They will spend that night or any other night on the street. Every single possession that they own is in that shopping cart. Can we really identify with that kind of person? I can't. And I suspect it's the case that every single person in this assembly would say, we cannot really identify with that person. Our life is just not like that. But the Bible says that Jesus can. He had nowhere to lay his head. He was poor. Paul once said that Jesus became poor so that we might become rich, spiritually rich. Another way that Jesus can identify with mankind is through sorrow. At funerals over the years, I've found, and this isn't always expressed to anybody besides maybe the preacher and a couple of close friends, but over the years I've found that at funerals, those who grieve are often offended. They're offended by well-meaning people who come up and say, oh, I know how you feel. Well, there may be some cases where a person actually does know how an individual feels. But there are also a lot of cases where the person does not know and cannot know. Remember, about 20 years ago, a lady, I had not been preaching very long, she lost her husband. Well, many people came up and tried to console her, and they said things like I just described, "We know how you feel." I still remember almost 2 decades later, that lady pulling me aside one day, it was after the funeral, and she kind of shook her finger at me and she said, "Brad, they do not know how I feel. They cannot know how I feel." She said, "My husband and I, we were married for more than 50 years, and there is no way that they can understand how I feel." I remember that point. And I strongly suspect that that lady was exactly right in the point that she was trying to convey. If a person has had an identical type of loss, there are probably some similarities. But there are also a number of cases where people use those words, it may be at a funeral or some other setting, and they do not have a clue about what they speak. But you know, Jesus knows. He understands. In John 11, verse 35, we're told that Jesus wept. Before Jesus died, he may have had to deal with the loss of Joseph. And again, not his biological father, but having grown up in that home, a man who was regarded for all practical purposes as his father, there's a very good chance that he had to face that loss. We know that he lost people who were close to him. There was Lazarus, John chapter 11. But then we also see from John chapter 17, verse 12, he also knew about another loss, a person who was near and dear to him. John 17, verse 12 tells us about his losing Judas. It's tragic to lose a mate at any time, but especially after 50 or more years of marriage. But what must have been on the Lord's mind when he lost Judas? John 17, verse 12. Judas, of course, was a man who was going to take his own life, and did. And how difficult that would be to go through that experience, to know what he was going to do. But not only do we have the suicide of Jesus, or Judas, but we also have his eternal state being described in an unfavorable way by the Lord. And for Jesus to think, "This was one of mine. This was one of the apostles. And this man is not only going to take his life, but this man is going to be eternally separated from God." As I understand John 17, 12 and Acts chapter 1, verse 25. That tells me that Jesus understands deep, deep loss. The deepest kind of loss. The Lord, as we look at his life, he felt a full range of emotions. In Matthew chapter 21, verses 12 through 13. Something else stands out from the Lord's life. There we find that he was in the temple. There were money changers there. Jesus saw a situation that was wrong, and he cast them out. He felt, the Bible doesn't use the word anger, but that really seems to be what's being described. He sent those people packing. Person may have an anger problem. And as they look at that emotion in their life, as they feel that anger well up at various times, they may feel like nobody can understand. They may go see the anger management therapist or specialist, but that person may not know how they feel. Other deep emotions may be within a person, and they want to express those, or they want to convey those to others, and people simply cannot understand how they feel. But Jesus knows. He knows every single time. He knows the feelings that can well up inside of a person. He's felt their power. Time and time and time again, we can make the point that Jesus, the one who was prophesied about coming to the earth, really understands mankind. The experiences that we have had some kind of parallel in the life of Jesus. That's why the Hebrew writer was able to say in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15, that we have a high priest. Not only do we have a high priest, but he was tempted in every point as we are, just like we are. And yet every single time, it was without sin. That's also why Paul was able to say in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 5, that we have a mediator. We have someone that can intercede for us. It doesn't do any good to have a mediator that cannot understand our position. If a mediator cannot express what we're feeling and our side of things, he or she is not going to be a successful mediator. A mediator has to understand both sides. And Jesus can and does do that perfectly. So the one who was described in the Bible has come, just as God described. And he does all the things that we've described tonight. So we have a simple question. Do you know him? And does he know you? Are you one of his people? When we understand who Jesus is, I believe that every single person who is rational would say, "I want him to be my friend." If someone can understand me that well, and he wants to be an advocate for me before the face of his Father, I want him to be on my side. Have you made that decision? Have you become a Christian by having faith in him? Repentance makes sense. If Jesus does all the things that we've described tonight, we'll want to live as he describes. Have we acknowledged him as the Son of God? And have we been joined to him by baptism? Galatians 3, verse 27. If not, tonight, we can become joined to the one who will perfectly understand us every single time in life. If we have become a Christian and we've left, Jesus knows the pain. He lost Judas. He doesn't want to lose us. And there's still time to come back. And that's this evening. If we can help you respond to the gospel, will you let us know as we stand and sing the selected song?